You're listening to the Inspired by Adventure podcast, brought to you by E3 Overland, with your host, Brad Kowitz, coming to you live from deep in the heart of who knows where, streaming to the world and beyond with the latest in Overland news, fun, and facts. Head over to e3overland.com to discover more. And now, here's your host, Brad Kowitz.
For today, we are going to talk about fridges with Reed Frick from Dometic. And I think this is going to be a great conversation because, let's be honest, I love to eat good chow when we're out camping. And I know many of you do. And so having a good way to store that food and keep your perishables cold is super important. And deciding to use the right 12-volt fridge in your rig is a big investment. And there's some things to consider if you're going to be installing one. So I'm excited to get some insight from Reed, who is an industry leader. And I'm positive that you guys are going to find some great value in today's conversation. Now, before I bring him on, I just want to let you know we have some exciting new E3 Overland Association exclusive content and events we are getting ready to gear up for, so be sure to keep an eye on your emails and check the member site often because we've got some really cool stuff coming up. Okay, let's just bring him on. Reed, man, thank you for joining the podcast today. How are you doing?
Good, Brad. Nice to be here. Looking forward to talking about one of my favorite subjects.
Right. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself and Dometic, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. So for Dometic, I'm the product manager covering the what we call it mobile cooling internally. So that's covering the CFX W, the old line, the new line, which is the CFX3. The batteries associated with that and all the, you know, accessories and everything. This is just a very small part of Dometic, believe it or not, although it's sometimes the most visible. But Dometic, we make products that pretty much make your mobile life easy. So most of these are found in RVs. So if, you know, any of your listeners out there do any RVing, we make awnings, air conditioners, toilets, furnaces, water heaters, and so on. So that's our business, is kind of taking those comforts of home and putting them into a vehicle.
Yeah, awesome. You know, my very first refrigerator I purchased just happened to be a Dometic, and it's been a great product. I've used it for a long time, and it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, the RVs and the boats, because I did a build in the back of my Jeep Wrangler where I used one of your drawer fridges in my system, and that was really a cool build, and that was a pretty interesting little tool to have. So it was cool that you guys offered that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're seeing a lot of people, you know, in their builds, taking some stuff from, like you just said, the RV and marine world and putting them into the overlanding world. So the products work great as a crossover.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, do you do a lot of camping?
I do. I live in Santa Cruz and go out to the Sierras a lot. And 395 is obviously one of my favorite areas, but I've got an old red FJ60 that has been with me on many, many trips. So, and that's usually the test rig for a lot of the new stuff from Dometic too. So,
oh man, what a great job to go out to 395 into the mountains and test a refrigerator. Man, I'm in. Let me know next time you go do that.
Yeah, I'll send you a Zoom.
Well, right on. Okay, well, let's dive into this, man. Let's talk about some of the pros and cons of using a 12-volt fridge versus an ice cooler versus a chiller, because I think there's pros and cons to all of it, but let's talk about some of those.
Yeah. So, you know, a traditional ice chest, varying levels of investment. You can buy the cheap foam one from the gas station, or you can, you know, buy a Yeti. All of them work pretty well. You know, it generally keeps your food cold. But one of the big things that personally I hate is like that watery, soupy mess of stuff that forms in the bottom of those when you're using ice. Now, you know, for like just beers or something, that's fine. But that sandwich you've made or any other food you want to bring along, you know, it kind of limits what you can bring with you and what you can make out on the trail. With powered cooling, you know, you don't need to use ice anymore, as the name suggests. And you can just bring food right out of your refrigerator at home and put it into, you know, this powered cooler or fridge freezer in your car. So it really has changed how I pack for a trip and the type of foods that I bring.
Yeah. You know, for me and my son, you know, we just ice chest, that's what we had for many forever. Right. Until finally my friend said, you really should try a refrigerator for as often as you're going out. You really should just have a dedicated fridge. And I honestly was a little hesitant. I'm like, man, that's kind of a big investment. But what I immediately realized after I got my fridge was, one, I had a lot more space because all that ice wasn't taking up all that extra room. And two, everything wasn't waterlogged. Like, you know, when you put stuff in, it doesn't matter how many Ziploc bags you put inside something. When you put something in a cooler and that water starts to form, man, everything just gets waterlogged.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you hit one of the biggest things, or you hit the two biggest ones, no watery mess and then the space. So that's one thing that people really, you know, kind of don't think about, or at least underestimate, is when they're upgrading from an ice chest to a fridge freezer. You know, half of that space in an ice chest is usually ice. And so you can either downsize and get a smaller fridge freezer than you would an ice chest, or you can use the same space and hold about twice as much. That's about what it comes out to.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is, you don't have to be that guy like, hey guys, I got to stop for ice.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of our lines is, you know, you can make ice too with these for your buddy who's still got a cooler or something.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. I saw the little ice tray. I was checking out all the new lines of stuff you guys had at SEMA. It was pretty cool to see that ice tray in there.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. You know, it's not like a continuous ice maker, but, you know, for a couple, making ice for a couple drinks, you know, every couple hours, hey, it's better than nothing.
Heck yeah, I agree. Okay. So we talked a little bit about the ice storage. Let's talk about like just the general, like packing of the refrigerator. I mean, there's gotta be a right way and a wrong way to kind of pack a fridge, right?
Yeah. You know, usually with an ice chest, you're packing for a few days. You really gotta plan out like, okay, this top level is gonna be Friday night. Then once I'm done with that, comes Saturday morning breakfast. And then under that, Saturday night. You know, if you've ever done any river trips too, that's kind of how you pack things. So, you know, you don't need that amount of care, with a fridge freezer just because it's always cold. You know, you're not conserving the ice, but, you know, generally, you know, I can speak to the fridge freezers that we make. You know, we've got the organizers in there, so you can, you know, take that divider, put it vertical. So, you know, you can keep one side beers, the other side food, or you can even put that thing flat. It comes out and pushes in, into kind of this keeper. So you could make it a horizontal shelf. So you could pack even things that are, you know, smushable, I'll say, on the bottom, and you could put heavier items on top if you want. But kind of going back to your original question, you know, to pack it properly, I usually put the heavier items on the bottom, and there's a small space above the compressor, and that space is still cold, but it will always be just a couple degrees warmer than, you know, for example, the bottom of the larger compartment. And so up there, I usually throw stuff, you know, like sensitive vegetables, like lettuce or something like that, or, you know, butter, dairy, stuff that you grab all the time that you don't want to be digging around way down in there. And, you know, stuff that's, it's easy to just grab it and that you're going to use for every meal.
Yeah. Right. Something else that I've done, I learned this over the couple of years, is that
I get rid of all the wrappers when I go like stock stuff, like, cause things will come in like a plastic, you know, Ziploc bag, and then there'll be a box around it. I usually just get rid of all the boxes and extra wrapping, and cause you don't really need it. It just takes up more space. And then something we've just started doing for our really long trips is we're actually pre-making meals and like vacuum sealing them. I should say we are.
Yeah.
That's me. My buddy Marco likes to cook everything fresh, but
yeah. And you know what? I mean, your vacuum seal idea is great. Like I've taken C of X's on fishing trips, like a float trip down the Sacramento River. And you know, I usually just catch and release, but every once in a while we'll grab a rainbow or something. And I've even filleted it like right on the bank and then stuck it in the vacuum sealer, filleted, and then stuck it right into the cooler. And you can either freeze it or keep it refrigerated. So that your vacuum seal idea works killer.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now let me ask you, the fridge operates better when it's full. Is that fair to say?
Yes, definitely. When it's full, you have all that stuff, so to speak, and that stuff, it gives you what's called thermal mass. And so it holds on to that cold. And so if you're opening the lid again and again, it's going to keep that temperature inside more consistent, and the compressor will kick on less often. So it's kind of like if you think of it, your house, you know, if it's super hot outside and you got the AC on, it's not a thermostat. If you have the, you know, windows open all the time, you know, that compressor, your AC unit's going to be working pretty hard to keep that temperature cool, you know, just like you're opening the lid. But if you've kind of, sealed or put a bunch of stuff in there, well, you know what, maybe this example doesn't work very well, but what I'm getting at is there's the compressor will kick on less often. Awesome. Which saves you energy and extends the life of the cooler.
Okay, well, good. Well, so you just validated my reasoning then, because when I take stuff out of the fridge, I always throw an empty bottle or a couple bottles of water in there to keep one, to keep water cold, but two, just to take up that space in there. So at least now I know I'm doing it right. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Now, yeah. What about temperature settings? This is something that people ask me all the time, and I kind of go back to my Navy days when I was in the Navy, because as a corpsman on a ship, we would always go and do food service inspections, and so we'd always have to check the temperatures of, you know, the refrigerators in the galley and make sure that things were clean and all that kind of stuff. So I've got a pretty good idea that, you know, what temperatures need to be for keeping, you know, perishable foods cold and stuff. But what, from your perspective, what do you guys recommend the refrigerator to be running at?
So we usually recommend 39 Fahrenheit for refrigeration and zero for freezing. You can go, just use that as a guideline to start with. Sometimes you could even turn that refrigeration temp up to like 40, 42 if, you're comfortable with it. The food will probably be fine at that temp and you're going to use a little less energy. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, start at 39 and then work from there. If you think it's a little too cold and you can stand it a little warmer, you know, it could pay off in some better energy consumption.
Yeah, because I mean that's something we definitely have to think about, right? I mean, it might be nice to have everything down at like 34 degrees and just super cold and whatnot, but you are using a lot more power when you do that, right? I mean, I got to imagine there's a significant difference between 39 and 34 degrees or even freezing.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, you could even while you're driving, you could turn down that temperature to you know, let's say 37, you know, 36, something like that. And that energy when you're driving is kind of free, you know, because it's running off the alternator. But then when you stop, maybe you turn it back up to, you know, 40, something like that, just to conserve a little bit. And, you know, depending on your battery setup, you could really stretch some of that energy and make it last a little longer.
Yeah, no, that's a great suggestion. Now, can we talk a little bit about power draw? Like, What can you expect from a fridge? I know there's a lot of parameters as far as, you know, the ambient temperature and how often it's kicking on and what size fridge, but what should people be thinking about when they're thinking about power consumption?
So first, and I had to do this too when I, you know, my background's engineering, but I had to remember back to electrical science when I was in school when I took this job. And kind of the golden equation here is watts equals amps times volts. So that's how all electricity operates. So watts is power, amps is current, and voltage is your measure of how much, how it can deliver that current. So when we talk about runtime for a battery, it's a pretty complex question. It's not a very easy one to just say, you know, oh, it's always X. There's a lot of variables that go into it. But so the easiest way to calculate it is take your battery and figure out what the usable capacity of that battery is. So find that out in amp hours, which is abbreviated as AH, you know, capital A, lowercase h. And that removes the voltage kind of part of the equation, which makes things a little simpler. And that's why we publish our average power consumption data in amp hours per hour. Because now all you have to do is, you know, let's say you have a 40 amp hour battery. You take 40, that's the total capacity, divided by whatever your fridge freezer, in this case a CFX, is using per hour, and that gives you your runtime. So that's it on a really basic level. Now there's reality. So, you know, now how do you find your usable amp hours? Well, on starter batteries, they don't really tell you. It's CCA, cold cranking amps, which doesn't give you anything. It'll tell you on deep cycle, and it'll tell you on accessory batteries, you know, that are out there. So find that usable, or find the battery capacity in amp hours. That's the first step. And then second is you got to figure out what the usable capacity is on the battery chemistry. So what kind of battery do you have on your setup,
Brad? I just run a single red top Altima battery. I do not run any kind of dual battery or a deep cycle battery.
Okay. So there's some different battery types. The most kind of common is an AGM, so absorbed glass mat. And that capacity is roughly, or the usable capacity is roughly 50%. So let's say you had 100 amp hour AGM battery, you would be able to use 50 amp hours from there to power, you know, your fridge freezer. Lithium, NMC, that's the some accessory batteries use that type of technology. That's about 80% usable capacity. And then there's lithium iron phosphate. And that's another type of lithium, and that's closer to 100% usable capacity. So these are, you know, kind of some things that people should use when they're trying to figure out exactly how long, you know, they'd get a runtime from an accessory battery using a fridge freezer.
Right on. Yeah, that's some great knowledge, man. I love taking a deep dive into technical aspects of stuff like that. Now, let me share some non-technical battery use on personal level.
Absolutely.
I have a single red top battery, and people always ask me, why don't I switch to a deep cycle battery, or why don't I run a dual battery system? And so me personally, we're constantly on the go. Like, we'll go from place to place to place. So we don't usually stay like multiple nights at one spot. And what I found is, I have a Dometic 40. And so if I'm just staying somewhere overnight for, you know, 8 to 12 hours, that the battery's fine. It's not killing it or anything like that. And so I've never had a need for anything. Now, when we have stayed, you know, in Baja at one site for like 3 or 4 days before. And then what I'll do is I'll just hook it up to an external battery, which works pretty well. But I think that's, if you're going to be staying a place for a long period of time, you know, having a dual battery system or an external battery or even some solar or something, I think from a practical standpoint makes a lot of sense. But if you're like me and you're constantly on the move, I mean, I've never found a need to have a dual battery system.
I agree with you. And I don't have a dual battery system. I bought an Odyssey. God, now I can't remember the name of the battery, but it's a deep cycle starter. Uh-huh. And I think it's about a 60 amp hour, but, man, I got between 35 and 45 hours of runtime. And then that's when the battery protection system from the CFX3 shut it down.
Right.
And I cranked the thing right over. So I was like, man, I am totally set. I don't need the dual battery. I agree with you. It's a little overkill, at least for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of good applications for it, but for me personally, I mean, that's a lot of extra weight when you talk about putting a dual battery in there. Now I do carry an external battery system because it's just nice to have for me for camera gear and running that fridge and stuff. Now you guys sell an external battery system. Is that right?
Yeah, we do. It's called the PLB40. And it's a 40 amp hour lithium iron phosphate battery.
Okay.
This will charge, pretty much we designed it to be a dual battery alternative. So, you know, if people are a little gun shy like myself on installing one and figuring out the bracketry and all the electronics and stuff, you know, this acts as a portable, removable dual battery system that's plug and play. So it charges right off your 12 volt. You know, you have the PLB40 plugged into your 12 volt socket, your fridge freezer, in our case CFX, plugged directly into the battery. And then by the time, you know, when you're driving to the campsite, your battery's charging up. And then when you get there and shut your car off, the PLB40 just takes over seamlessly.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just nice to have. I mean, one, you can run your fridge off them, but you can do so much more with, you know, powering up, you know, a bunch of other stuff or recharging, you know, headlamps if you need to or whatever. So they're pretty convenient to have. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's expensive. It's pricey. It's $849, but, you know, it's a dual battery replacement. You can move it from car to car and it's plug and play. So, you know, it's hard to make everybody happy, and I wish I could make that thing for cheaper, but, you know, that's one of the reasons why it's so expensive is because we put in that lithium iron phosphate chemistry. So you can use the full 40 amp hours, you know, it's got 2000 charge cycles. So it's a premium price because you get some premium features.
Yeah, but I'll say I recently switched over to a lithium portable battery system, and what a difference it's made. It's like half the weight, which, you know, we care about when we're loading up our vehicles. So it's nice to have that lithium because it's a smaller smaller battery. It doesn't weigh so much. Yeah, I'm a fan. But we digress too much on batteries.
It's a big question, though. We get that a lot.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I think it's important to talk about. But I think, you know, again, it's important to mention that the fridges don't run full time. They're only running when they need to, right? And so it all depends on how well it's packed, what the temperature is, what the ambient temperature is. And then, you know, if it's a nice cold winter day out in the desert like we find ourselves often, I don't think my fridge turns on very much at all.
Exactly. I mean, in the late fall or something, if it's 40 degrees outside, I mean, it doesn't run just because it doesn't need to. So the power consumption is like nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's switch gears here for a second, because I have a question that I actually asked a while back, and now I get asked the question often. And so I bought the Jeep Gladiator truck, and I currently have a fridge slider in there and my fridge. and it's open air. So when we're out in the desert, you know, there's dust flying around, there's mud flying around, hot, cold, whatever. My fridge is open air. And I know you guys don't brand your fridges as, you know, being open to the environment. Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, pros and cons of that, things I should be worried about and looking for?
Yeah. So, you know, you're right. We don't say that these fridge freezers are weatherproof. There's not a lot of companies that do say that. I can tell you personally, like, you know, I mentioned before, you know, I've used them on drift boat trips down the river fishing. They get soaked. You know, I'm using them as a bench seat and pushing against it, and, you know, I've never had an issue. We know a lot of people, a lot of hardcore users who have them in the back of a pickup for years. They never have any issues. The challenge, you know, from a company side is saying, if we make a blanket statement like, oh yeah, they're weatherproof, you'd be surprised how abusive people are with their gear. And, you know, if someone drops it in a lake, they're going to return it, say, hey, you said it was weatherproof. Why can't I get a new one? So I'd say that my advice is this: just be smart about it. You know, if you are, you know, going to take a hose and start spraying it up the vent holes, that's probably not a good idea to do. But if you're gonna, you know, just have it outside and it's in the rain and dust and stuff, I don't think you would have many issues. So if you just use your head, you know, it is an electronic product. Keep that in mind, but it's also an outdoor product. So take care of it, you know, use it like you want to have it for years, but you'll be fine.
Awesome. Yeah, I do wash my truck with the fridge back there, and it hasn't been a problem. But what I have done, and I don't know if I need to do this, but I take like an air hose after things are dry, and I'll just blow out all the dust inside the vents and stuff. I don't know if I need to do that, but it seems to blow out quite a bit.
Oh yeah, that's a great idea, Brad. That works great. I think that's a really smart kind of preventive maintenance thing. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I'm just a stickler. I bleach clean it after every trip, just because, you know, that's the medical side of me. I got to do that, but I got to keep it.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you what, the other word of advice after a trip is, you know, even if the thing's empty, just take it out of wherever it is and leave that lid open and make sure it dries out. Because I've definitely, you know, come back from Expo West and it's late and I'm tired, and, you know, I just go straight to bed and forget about the cooler for a little while, and it's off. And then, you know, 4 or 5 days later, I pop it open and I've got a nice science experiment growing in there. So,
oh yeah,
to leave that lid cracked open.
Oh yeah. I had a really pleasant experience. We came back from a trip and I shut everything down, and I think it was the same thing. I think we came home late or whatever, and it was really hot the next day outside, and I hadn't done anything, and I didn't think to go. This was the drawer fridge, and I didn't think to go empty it. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't on the top of my to-do list. And so like 2 days later, I finally got around to like going back there and cleaning stuff out. And there was some ham slices in there.
Oh yeah.
It had just been cooking and cooking for like 2.5 days. It was not nice. It wasn't a good experience. So clean your fridge after every trip, everybody.
Exactly. And you know, we've got the drain plug in there, so it makes it easy to drain. I even just popped the lid off, put it on its side, hose it out, and let it dry. And then, you know, when I put the lid back on, I just a little tip is I take like a little bit of the power cord and kind of put it over where the lid latches, and it just props the lid open, you know, a half inch or something like that. So keeps the airflow in there.
Yep. I do the same exact thing. In fact, mine in the garage is sitting just like that.
Nice.
Awesome. Nice. Okay. Now let me ask you a little bit about like, just some of the airspace that fridges needed, because a lot of guys are, you know, they're building up their systems in the back of their, whether it's their Jeep or their Toyota or whatever, and they're building their fridges and their shelves all around encompassing. What are some of the recommendations that you have for as far as, you know, space gaps and dimensions and that kind of stuff?
I mean, the first one to think of is we recommend about 2 inches of clearance around the vent holes. And that's just to ensure that, you know, the components in there get proper ventilation. And so how a compressor cooling system works is that it's kind of weird to visualize this, but it removes heat from inside the compartment and expels it out. And so it's hard to think that way, like even when it's already cold, removing heat, but you can kind of think of it like removing energy out of there and expelling it. And so if you don't have that 2 inches of clearance space, it is trying to expel that heat, but it can't. And so the whole kind of system becomes less efficient. So make sure you got that 2 inches of clearance. Second is when you're looking at purchasing a fridge freezer, look at where the lid hinges. So on our smaller units, for example, the lid hinges on one of the short ends. And so when you're going to open the lid is going to need quite a lot of space above it to open fully. Versus the larger units, the lid hinges on the long edge. And those then need a little less space above it to open. So you could take that into consideration when you're designing your setup. And then, you know, you can, on those larger units, you can switch the hinge side of the lid, so you don't have to worry about that. On the small ones, you can't. So keep that in mind. Slides, you know, a slide is a really good way to be really efficient with your space, but then gain access to the fridge when you're trying to get, you know, into the inside of it. Trying to think. Obviously, where's your power? Where's your 12-volt? Where are you going to put your battery if you're going to have one back there? Those are, you know, keep those in mind as well.
Yeah, I'll say very early on when I first got my fridge, this was many years ago, when I first got it, I just threw it in the back of the Jeep. I'm like, I don't need a slider or anything like that. I'm just going to throw it back here. And it was fine. And I think I had a bungee cord that was holding it down at the time or whatever. And that worked okay. But boy, I'll tell you, having a dedicated fridge slider, just I'm like, why did I wait? Why didn't I just do this in the beginning? Because it's so much nicer to be able to just, you know, slide it right out and get access to everything you need. I think it should just be part of your purchase. If you're buying a refrigerator, which we know it's an investment, I think you got to go ahead and just, you know, buy the slider with it. You'll be happier that way.
Yeah, you're right. Because it not only gives you easier access, but it also holds it down for you and makes sure it's not banging around in the back and stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what about the blankets, the covers? How important do you think those are?
So think of it like a phone case. So these do not add any insulation. You know, they may look like they do, but they don't. So think of it just like a phone case. It's protecting, you know, your piece of outdoor gear, just like you would a phone. So our new covers we just came out with, though, are definitely way better than our old ones. They just look a lot better. They're fit and molded specifically to the models. And we put in some zippered pockets so you can stash, you know, the extra power cord or your bottle opener, you know, phone charger, stuff like that. And then on the display side of the cover, we've got this catch that holds on with Velcro. And it looks like a little PAL system, you know, with like kind of that looped storage system, which I'm sure you're familiar with from the service. And that, you know, you can slip in screwdrivers, a knife, clip-on lights, whatever you want. And what I really love is if you don't like it, just pull it off And now you've got a blank canvas. So now you've got a place to Velcro on whatever you want. So make, you know, any sort of patch system that you care for, you can put right on there.
That's awesome. I just learned something. So I didn't realize there was no insulation advantage to using one of those. I had actually always believed that there was. So that's interesting.
Yeah. We've done some testing with that. You know, I needed to make sure. And you know, if you look on the web, it says protective. And I definitely do not want to mislead anybody with that. But it is very protective. And Look, you know, like I said, you just buy a new expensive piece of gear. You want to keep that thing looking good and also add some functionality to it. So that's the story with the covers.
Yeah. Awesome. That's solid knowledge. Thanks for sharing that. Now let's talk about the size of the fridge. Like if somebody calls and says, you know, look, I'm interested in buying a fridge, you know, I'm a weekend warrior, family of two. I mean, how do you guys talk to people about what's the best size for their application? What should they be thinking about?
So, you know, the kind of easiest thing to say, okay, what are our best sellers? So without a doubt, the 55 size, the 75 dual zone, and the 35 are our best sellers. Now, to really answer your question, though, you know, what you want to do is, you know, roughly figure out what you have for your traveling companions. You know, is it going to be just you? Is it going to be, you know, you and your partner and a dog? Or do you, you know, what's your usual group of people? And then after that, you're looking at length of time. So is it just, you know, an overnight? Is it a weekend? Or are you going out for, you know, a week on a trip, you know, touring Southwest or something like that? So we do have some of that guidance embedded in our descriptions on the website, but in general, you know, 35, 45, that type of size is great for solo or, you know, a pair of people traveling. And again, you got to remember, people generally overbuy the size, what they think they need, just because they're used to an ice chest. So you really don't need all that space that you would normally have in an ice chest. For example, if you have a 55, you know, Yeti, you're not, the 55 Dometic is going to have a ton more space in there. But, you know, if you're already investing quite a bit of money in this product, you might as well go a little bit higher if you think you're going to use, you know, that space at some point. So, for example, at Expo West, I talked to plenty of people, and they, if they're listening now, they might remember these conversations. But, you know, they were looking at the 55 and said, well, you know, for, you know, a couple hundred bucks more, I can go to 75 dual zone, and I've got the room for it, so why not just do it? And so for some people, that works as well. And now you've got a ton of flexibility on how you use that product.
Yeah. What I like about the fridge is it's an investment. It's a little pricey, obviously more than a cooler, but it's a long-term product. It's not something that's going to, you know, you're going to get rid of in a year or two. I mean, so I think there is some, you know, some value into, look, if you know your family is going to grow, or you know that there's a possibility that you might do extended trips, to just go ahead and buy once, you know what I mean? And just go with it instead of buying a small one now and then maybe I'll upgrade later, because really you don't need to upgrade. I mean, the fridge is going to last you a long time.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. What was I just going to say with the sizing? You made me think of something, but I'll come to it after.
So I know our Alaska trip got canceled this year, unfortunately, but one of the things that we were talking about fridges in our group was, you know, we all have different sizes. There was five vehicles going, and we all have different size refrigerators. But what we were going to do is kind of conquer and divide. So when you're with a convoy, something you can think about is, all right, maybe this person can, you know, keep the produce in their fridge, and this person will keep all the vacuum sealed pre-made meals, and this person will keep all the meats. And so that was kind of the conversations that we were having as we were gearing up for, you know, it was going to be a 3-week trip, 5 vehicles. And so I think when you're thinking about refrigerators, if you're going with more than one person, there is some things to consider about. You don't have to put it all in your fridge. If you know, how can you share some of those resources throughout your convoy?
That's a great idea. Yeah. I mean, cause then you can keep things, you know, almost even more organized to be like, oh yeah, I know Steve's always got, you know, our fresh veggies, and, you know, just go over there and grab that stuff, and other rigs got the other gear. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we like to eat good food. And so the food, it was a heavy conversation of our trip planning. So unfortunately we're not going this year, but we will be going next year. So, but we always talk about food when we're getting ready to, like, okay, what are we eating?
I know, it's a huge part. And what's been some of your favorite or kind of most crazy things you've cooked out there with the fridge?
Oh my gosh. I'll tell you, I mean, every time my buddy Mark, look, I cook breakfast, then I make little, you know, sausages and stuff. I'm not a big cook, but my buddy Josh, my buddy Marco, they are always making meals that you just would not even, you're like, really, we're having this at camp? Like fresh salsa and some fish tacos. You know, we're eating steaks and crab and just all kinds of great food out there. And it's all because we're able to keep, you know, the produce and the perishables cold for long periods of time. I mean, when you're out on the trail for, you know, 4 or 5 days, you roll up somewhere and you've been driving for, you know, 10 hours that day, and you pull up and have an amazing meal, man. It just warms the soul. It brings everybody's spirits up. You know, it's just awesome.
I know. And sometimes I almost feel like, you know, the food gets so ridiculous when you have a fridge. That's almost like a challenge. Like, what's the craziest thing we can cook in the most remote place we can get to? And it kind of becomes this, like, weird game. You're like, wait, are we really doing this?
Yeah. I get people comment all the time. They're like, you eat better on your trips than you do at home. And I say, yeah, sometimes that's true.
I know. But it sure is fun.
Yeah, it is. Well, Reed, man, thank you so much, dude. This has been a great conversation. I've learned a couple things. And so hopefully the viewers have learned some good knowledge from you today. I really appreciate you being on the show today, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm always happy to talk fridge freezers and batteries and solar setups and all that sort of stuff. So if you guys have any more questions, or anyone, you know, anyone in the crew on E3, let me know, and feel free to reach out to me.
Awesome, Reed. Well, I appreciate you, man. Guys, if you are interested in a fridge or any of the other products, definitely go check out Dometic. They got great stuff over there. I've been using them personally for years, so it's good, solid stuff. Reed, best wishes to you, man. Safe travels.
Head over to www.e3overland.com to join the fun and community. You've been listening to the Inspired by Adventure podcast with Brad Coetz and E3 Overland Association, the next generation in overlanding memberships. Grab your spot now with special discounted pricing for listeners. Just head over to e3overland.com.